Just want to read something from the poet David White that someone showed me recently. And it's about the conversational nature of reality. Your great mistake is to act the drama as if you were alone. To feel abandoned is to deny the intimacy of your surroundings. Put down the weight of your aloneness and ease into the conversation. There's no self that will survive a real conversation. There's no self that will survive a real meeting with something other than itself. There's no organization that will keep its original identity if it's in the conversation. After a while, you realize you don't actually want to keep that old static identity. You want to move the pivot of your presence from this thing you think is you into this meeting with the future, with the people you serve, with your family, with your loved ones. And it's in this self-forgetfulness where you meet something other than yourself and all kinds of astonishing things happen. So I would love to have a conversation about all kinds of astonishing things that can happen. About awakening to our full potential to love. And awakening to this world that needs our presence. That is calling for each of us and ready for us. And I suppose that's why I'm up here, because I'm always wanting to have this conversation. And it's quite odd to have this conversation with all of you arrayed in this fantastic mandala. It's really amazing. Yeah. So I'm going to just share a few things that hopefully will feed our conversation, a real conversation. And perhaps today, and you know, if we're lucky and we're willing, more real conversations about what really matters in the days to come. So I just want to remind us about what we might be talking about. The word insight so quickly becomes this thing. And we don't. I think sometimes we just have lost sight of what we're actually even what it's all about. So I just thought I'm going to remind us of some very basic dharma. So I'm going to assume that none of this is anything you haven't heard before. But also I'm going to remember the words of the Buddha, which is, "Wide open is the door of the immortal for all who have ears to hear. Let them send forth faith to meet it." Yeah. So let's just see what it's like to hear this from where you are now. And all the astonishing things that might happen. So, insight, vipassana, is the word that's most often associated, and it has this meaning of seeing through, which is different than looking at. Yeah, it's not only looking at, but seeing through. And it's a direct perception. So this direct seeing is a direct experiencing that is distinct from thinking about. Sometimes said, different from speculation, even very well thought out speculation. And so insight, why is it so important? Insight leads to the development of wisdom or prajna. Yeah? It's flashes of insight that begin to become a more steady illumination of prajna, wisdom. So insight can deepen or accumulate a critical mass, you could say. And get deeper. So we know about the levels of wisdom, from hearing to reflecting to meditating. And this meditating isn't just sitting on a cushion meditating. It's not that. It's this direct seeing. It's a knowing of wisdom not as something that's made up of ideas. Yeah. So in that sense, non-conceptual. It's not constructed of ideas. It's a direct knowing. And wisdom is what eradicates ignorance, that frees us from craving, aversion, and ignorance. And this freedom is the goal of the Dharma. So we have vipassana, insight, wisdom, prajna. And then we have this great name that I was jokingly saying, well, this would be a good order name. Yatha Bhuta Jnana Dasana. So I had a good chuckle about that with a scholar, but luckily that was not Manida's name. So knowledge and vision of things as they really are. Yeah, this is a very, this is this point of critical mass. Just knowledge and vision of things as they really are. It's so simple, and that's actually something that it's good to reflect on. It's not something very complicated. It's actually the making less complex, just as it is, just this. Yeah? Thus. So this knowledge and vision of things as they really are also has a sense of directness. Sangharakshita describes it as an illumination in which the brightness of which things of in which things become visible in their reality. And at this point, traditionally, is the entering into the Dharma stream, often called the arising of the Dharma eye. It's fantastic. The arising of the Dharma eye, the eye that sees the Dharma directly. And at this point of stream entry, enlightenment is assured. It's and sometimes a phrase is irreversibility. And I was reflecting that it's not assured because you just earned something, you know, like I paid $5 and now I get to see the movie, which is actually $15, I think. It's not because I've just earned something. That's not why. It's because in seeing in this way, so directly, there's no denying what one has seen. Yeah. Something's broken through. There's no denying what one now knows. And you just have to live in alignment with that. That is why it's irreversible. It's not because you then forget about it, in a sense. It's because it becomes who you become. So there's just this natural heedfulness, you could say. It's not so much like the discipline, a forced discipline. So this natural morality becomes just, of course. Why harm? What could be the good in that? And this, you can see in the four qualities most often describing a stream enterer in the Pali Canon, which is a faith in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and establishing a firm foundation in ethics. And then there's right view, the other, another way we can remember what it is, what we're talking about when we're approaching insight. It's right view or perfect vision, a glimpse that sets us on the path and then matures until it's firmly established and unshakable in the practitioner who enters this Dharma stream and proceeds all the way to full awakening. So full awakening, also enlightenment, is kind of interesting because that seems like such a far-off concept sometimes, but it's the natural consequence. Yeah? We have all of us in this room that have set off on the path, have some kind of relationship to that. And it's also Shraddha, which brings out the emotional and volitional elements of that are so crucial to insight. So this Shraddha is this longing for what's possible. So we must have some sense of it, and it becomes a confidence born of experience. So this is a knowing from experience that this path and goal is attainable. And also more in the realm of emotion is bodhicitta. So Sangharakshita, one of his contributions in the Dharma world, is this seeing the awakening of bodhicitta as speaking about the same unfolding or the same emergence as the arising of insight. So this knowing isn't just, the knowing of insight is not just our capacity for clarity. This knowing is also embodied as an energy, a force. And it's also embodied in awakening as our emotional capacity. So wisdom, energy, compassion, it's all part of what insight is opening up. And the last thing, and these are all drawing from aspects that Sangharakshita has taught quite a bit on. The last aspect of insight we could be holding in sight is the evolution of consciousness. Yeah. So it's not just what is known; it's the development of the mind that can know as well, just as much as what is known. Yeah. So the evolution of consciousness. Building from just the sense experience we get, the sense consciousness, to this self-consciousness where we're aware of and able to conceive that there is experiencing happening, to what he calls transcendental consciousness, which transcends a distinction between self and object. So this is being able to see the world, this consciousness can see the world as it is. So while we have this experience of being a self-experiencing, there's also this consciousness that is aware that the subject and object distinction is a partial view. Yeah? So it can see through that. And then there's this absolute consciousness that's just undivided completely undivided jnana, not vijnana, divided consciousness, but jnana, undivided consciousness. So in a way, when we're talking about insight, we're talking about evolving a capacity we all have. And in a way, it's discovering or uncovering this capacity. So I just wanted to put that out there for this next few days or the rest of our lives. What is it that we're approaching? What this path insight, what is it that we're approaching? What is it about? And in the groups, one thing you might explore is, what do you know to be true of the Dharma from your experience? How do you know what you know? What do you know from direct experience? And just simply put, what we see is praticca-samutpada, which is not a view. So we might take it on as a view, but it actually is not a view because it's just a description of how things are. Yeah? So it's not speculative, although it may start out as a concept. And it's especially about right view is especially about seeing into arising and dissolving in dependence upon conditions and seeing cyclic and progressive conditionality. So seeing the Four Noble Truths, which is completely linked to the confidence that the path and goal is one that we can walk and realize. Really understanding progressive conditionality is that confidence. And really that's why the Dharma was taught. It can be put in so many different words, but I'm just going with sort of the most bare Pali Canon core teaching. So particularly insight into or seeing through how we assume we exist as a self is one of the most liberating breakthroughs we can have that can then just free up energy for the freeing the process towards freedom to unfold. So there's a lot of energy locked up in our conception of self and how we exist. It's just like sucking energy to keep that going. I mean, in the face of all evidence to the contrary, it takes so much energy to uphold that. But that kind of stress we just think of as normal. Yeah, that's just normal life. That's ordinary life. So so the first place we're directed in practice to look is to unleash that, to begin to unlock that. And so we have the in the Pali Suttas, the guidance to look at the three lakshanas. Yeah? Of the assumption of there being this self there that we then go through so much effort to uphold. That's the first fetter to be broken too. We look at the system of the fetters. And in the three lakshanas, we arrive at that by seeing the impermanence of everything that's conditioned. It's just arising, dissolving. The unsatisfactoriness of trying to make that anything other than what it is. And the insubstantiality of all the projections we've put upon that. They're not there. We can do it, but they're not there in the way we presume they are. Yeah, so there's just so much practice. I'm not going to say more about that. But there's so much practice that can be done to look into that. And really the training is to look deeply into our assumptions with direct experience and see what's really there. It's kind of fairly simple instruction in a way, but there's a lot there. So seeing what's really there. Yeah. It takes persistence, and this thorough investigation is wise attention. This thorough investigation into all our assumptions is the proximate cause for insight arising. And, you know, that can happen at any moment. I mean, we could do it right now and just be curious about who we think's up here and who's there on your cushion. I mean, just have a look. So at the time I have, what I wanted to do was have this start a conversation. So just I thought I'd put that out there just as what's the terrain we're in. And I wanted to get curious about approaches to insight in Triratna. And I have a few things that I'm curious about. So approaches to insight in Triratna. So what is Triratna? What do we have here in this room? This room's a glimpse of Triratna. So we have some community with a shared purpose of some kind. I like to get interested in how people relate to that themselves. We have this kind of Triratna common language that we need to have so that we can sort of have some sort of communication, some sort. But language is not the only communication we have. But it is useful. But not confusing all our words like common going for refuge and all these kinds of things that we can so easily say. I mean, there's something that's brought you here, so I'm observing that, something that's brought me here. And I'm very curious about what that is. The Dharma is of a nature of a personal invitation. So while we may use words and concepts, I think we can really get much, much more of a sense of what is bringing people onto the path, what is alive for them, if we are relating to each other in a way that is much more curious than the surface level of what we might assume about what Triratna is, what we assume I'm doing here, you're doing here, you know. And that's the kind of conversation I love to have. I mean, in broad brushstrokes, I could say that it's a community in which we're somehow here, right view, can fully emerge among us, within each one of us among us. Freedom can emerge. Bodhicitta, arise. And it's all happening. We're not the first Sangha, so it's all been happening since the time of the Buddha. It's all just been, there's this force we're part of, and our box that we can draw a line around it is called Triratna, but it's a force that's been happening and unfolding. And we're participating in it. I think that's something we can derive a lot of confidence in, is that we're actually participating in something that's perhaps profoundly meaningful and liberating. So, paths to insight in Triratna. It would take many days to describe all the paths to insight, so I don't even want to try to do that. But I just wanted to say, in the broadest sense, all the ways in which people that are connected to Triratna, probably most closely members of the order, making the strongest sort of explicit commitment to awakening to each other, to our mutual awakening. That everything that any one of us does approaching reality, And all that combined are the Triratna paths to insight. Yeah? So in the broadest sense. And I think it would be such a disservice to try to say, oh, well, that specific thing is it, and that's not it. My general feeling of the attitude is that kind of curiosity. And I do find interesting that Samyak Drishti, right view, seems to come into view, seems to get deeper through Kalyana Mitrata, through being in the conversation, yeah? So I'm not too concerned about whether you have it right or wrong. I want to know about the process you're in. I want to know about what you're learning. I want to know about how you have no idea about what's happening. That's really interesting. So I was curious about how, as the trends in the order where more order members are explicitly in the conversation about insight, you know, what kind of conversation we're having. You know, are we having a real conversation? No. Think of that as kind of a naked conversation, a courageous conversation. And there seems to be some charge around the conversation, which can sometimes seem like there's maybe something we need to do about that, solve it or something. But I think whatever problems we're having as we get more and more into the conversation about insight, and I don't mean conversation by talking, I mean this, our edges meeting, yeah? That's what I mean by conversation, and our edges meeting. That's really quite something for those edges to meet, yeah? It's a bit, yeah. It's not just like, hello. Yeah, it's a bit like, wow. I mean, one of my favorite things is just to completely not comprehend another person. It's just so fantastic. It's like, wow. Yeah. And so we have that opportunity, and I don't know how often we just live in that. Like, wow. Yeah. There's so much, I think in England the expression is faffing about. You know? And I've come to see that I'm just such an inconvenient truth. It just, you know, whatever fantasy I have about what Bodhi is supposed to look like, you know, all those fantasies for myself or others, it just, you know, those are such limited views. And I think in this more courageous conversation, the more real conversation, in some place in the Bodhisattva Ideal lectures that probably come from the seminars on the endlessly fascinating cry, I think Sangharakshita talks about, we have so much Dharma in the world now to us, and what do we do with all that Dharma? So many ideas and teachings, and he suggests that we might need to unknow things. That might be, once we, so I'm talking to people that have done quite a bit of Dharma study, and yes, I wouldn't say the same thing to maybe someone who had no idea of the Dharma, but you do. So having known the Dharma, he suggests that perhaps we should unknow some things and unlearn some things and really notice the questions, the real questions, not the questions we're supposed to be asking, but the real questions that are arising in practice. So I get excited by imagining an order where we're not running around telling each other things, you know, telling each other what we're supposed to be asking, telling each other what it's supposed to look like, and asking, like, really great questions, like asking people the kind of questions they would love to be asked. You know? You know, in your next meeting with an order member, you could say, what would you love me to ask you? Yeah. Let's have a real conversation. So another thing you can explore in your group with why, when I wonder about why we don't have real conversations or what this kind of, what happens as we start to approach insight. So, you know, in the individual, it's, they say that the this really decisive breaking free of energy is this moment of entering the stream and breaking the three fetters, yeah? Of putting our eggs in the basket of there being a self. Use that expression, you know, investing in, really investing in, hoping there's a self in there. So breaking through that fetter. And the fetters of doubt, which lead us to not really just practice the Dharma, just live more and more in accordance with how things are. And then this relying on, kind of faking it, you know, like relying on these moral rules and religious observations. So just put on, yeah, like the, it's like, no, you guys like football. It's like putting on the Manchester jersey and then just like, I go out in the field and try to pretend I'm a member of the team, you know, like just wearing the jersey is going to do it. And I, trust me, they would find out very soon. so I got really curious about what the three fetters look like collectively. Isn't that interesting? Like if we're going to be, I'm quite interested in the order being a place where that all, you know, like we're participating in this force of awakening. And I kind of imagine it's sort of like this amoeba-like shape, you know, like at different times, different people might just like be on the very edge of that, you know, like right over the edge of what's known for any of us. And maybe it's somebody else. And that there's this kind of amoeba-like order shape. Yeah, just completely flying towards that openness that the Buddha was inviting us to. And then, like, you know, these, what stops us from just flying together? You know, just, I'm very interested in that. And not because I feel like pathologizing us particularly, but because I think, what if we could break through that? You know, I get excited by that. So that's something in your groups you could also look at. You know, the how does this clinging to a self-view function collectively? I mean, I have some thoughts about that. I don't need to spew them on you. But how does that happen? What happens when I'm in a conversation with somebody and it's confounding me or they're changing? It's like, you know, they're changing, like that just does not seem possible. What happens when that's happening? Yeah. When the shape we're taking is so inconveniently not what it's supposed to be, our idea of what it's supposed to be. What happens in a community when doubt is holding us back? One of the teachings I love, which comes from the Vajrayana tradition, just nips this in the bud. It's quite interesting. You know, it just says, look, you have the perfect teacher. You are the perfect student. You have the perfect teachings. This is the perfect time. And this is the perfect place. Now get on with it. But what's doubt in a community? Huh? What does that do? You know, really, we have what we need to wake up. There's this quote I like from Ajahn Sumedho. The reality of non-attachment, of non-grasping, reveals itself in what we can say is nibbana. If we look at it in this way, nibbana is here and now. It is not an attainment in the future. The reality is here and now. It is so simple, but beyond description. It can't be bestowed or conveyed. It can only be known by each person for themselves. And I was thinking about this dependence on moral rules and religious observances. What does that look like in a community? You know, I'm appreciating the system of spiritual training that Sangha Rakshita has given us, because it's really it's like another description of paticca samuppada. Yeah, it's not like it's not very prescriptive, and in fact, some of the more recent teaching on it has tried to be less prescriptive. So it's not like mindfulness of breathing equals integration, metta-bhavana equals positive emotion. Yeah, it's actually more that this is a principle of development. And so yeah, I wonder, you know, in becoming a more advanced student, the learner has to begin to be more creative in directing their learning. And it's not just, in a way, it's not just as simple as follow, do exactly this and do exactly that. But there is quite a good description of what needs to be in process. Yeah. So I wonder about that too. Our questions about what so-and-so is doing and what so-and-so is doing. Maybe we could be more, get to the heart of what's really being got at, the way to understand how we're all practicing, and not rely too much on literal specificity. I would love to encourage us to weaken these three fetters and even go on further, you know, to look at all the subtler forms of clinging to a self, really take on the dynamics of craving and aversion. It's all just locked up in clinging, grasping. And so the last thing I want to say is just one other thing I think we could do is to get more effective at what I'm going to call the transcendental path. So, you know, at one point, Sangha Rakshita described the Eightfold Path in the mundane form and then the transcendental path. And we could just say that what happens to the path after there is significant awakening? I'm seeing through clinging to a self. What happens? So things change. And I'm actually going to just suggest we look at this in the teachings on the stages of the spiritual training. So we have integration, positive emotion, receptivity, spiritual death, and rebirth as a kind of process that we're in. And in getting better at or getting more skilled at the process, I feel that we will be stronger as an order in supporting the arising of insight. And one thing I've just been noticing is it's not just it's not a one-shot deal, right? Like you just don't go through and then have spiritual death and rebirth as one linear progression. And I wonder if, I don't think anyone just thinks that, but I just wonder if we're actually subtle enough about what does happen. So, you know, after significant spiritual death experiences, you know, when insights arising as to reality, the nature of reality, just getting interested in how that then gets integrated. So then going from that place through integration, the integration of that insight. And positive emotion from the basis of that insight. And getting better at this process and getting better at supporting this process among us. I think this is really, it's not all that neat. it's kind of messy. Because that nice glued together person is kind of unraveling, yeah? And I think that's something that it would be good to for us to learn how to support better. And I would say that being in a real conversation is one of the best ways to support that. Yeah. I mean, we need to get off the map of what should be happening and actually look at what is happening. And a lot of times after the spiritual death experiences, banished parts of oneself that didn't, we couldn't really accommodate because they didn't fit with our idea of who we were. You know, so, oh, I'm reasonable. I'm not reactive, you know, whatever it is. You know, all these banished bits after the spiritual death experience, it becomes like Klesha O Rama, you know? Because all that was like, that's just not there. You know, it's clearly there. Other people can see it's there, but for us, it's not there. It's like, hello! Something wants to, some, you know, some Karma Vipaka wants to have a conversation. And I just, I think as an order, we're going to need to get good at that, not only for ourselves, but with each other, which is quite interesting. Because at the same time, it's not, how are we good at that, understanding the bigger trajectory of what's going on? So if we start just correcting all that in a really superficial way, it's really, it's like we're interrupting a process, yeah? That doesn't mean that someone just goes around, you know, being condoned to be massively unskillful, but it's this kind of sympathetic meeting of that that further unfolding of the path. So I just wanted to say that because I feel like a lot of confusion around what's going on is how people are interpreting what's going on with people. It would be great to be really curious, like, wow. You know, you've had this seeing through, clinging to self, and now you hate people more than you ever did. Wow! Yeah? So that's something I would like to challenge us on, or our ideas about what, again, this fantasy of what it's supposed to look like. And I'm just saying this is like, it makes so much sense, right? Like, this is the process. And I've seen many people go through it. And it doesn't, well, it's uncomfortably unpredictable because what we're doing is we're no longer telling our, in a way, we're trying to not tell ourselves what's supposed to be happening so much, right? Because, well, I don't know. Let me restate that. There's a lot, self-clinging includes a lot of telling ourselves how it's all supposed to unfold. And telling other people how they're supposed to be unfolding, and then also how we're supposed to be interacting. Self-clinging includes a lot of that. Yeah, if we loosen that, we're inviting an unpredictability. But there's a natural lawfulness to it. Yeah, I mean, really, the unpredictability of clinging less to self is in the long game, it's going in a good direction. Yeah, but along the way, it just it can be profoundly uncomfortable. I think just having a lot of love, this positive emotion, having a kind of practice of positive emotion that can be big enough for that. You know, we need to be more unconditionally loving in a way, to be a community that supports the arising of insight. Because it can be seen through if it's allowed to be seen. And if I fear you, that you're going to try to correct me, it may just not come out. So we need to be braver in showing ourselves, and we need to be kinder in receiving each other, and in receiving ourselves, actually, to go deeper in practice. Okay, let me just see if there's anything else. There's nothing on these cards, really. I just go like this. It's very soothing. Ah. Yeah, so I would like us all to be invited into the real conversation to create a culture. You know, our collective karma, what is our collective karma? Well, one way it shapes up is the culture, the environment we create, yeah, for ourselves and for each other. So what would it be to create a culture that really invites a real conversation? So I think I'll just end with another little bit from David White. He's phoning me now. All of human existence has to do with this cycle of appearance and disappearance. And yet we spent no time apprenticing ourselves to the disappearing part of the cycle. If you get into a real conversation, it's going to nourish you, but it will also pull you apart to make way for the new person. Ultimately, real conversations are life and death issues. Poetry is the art of creating language against which there is no defensive. In a good conversation, you are trying to do exactly the same thing, in which the other person is not only brought into confrontation with reality, but you are too.